Good evening. This is Mae Brussel, and it's broadcast number 663, August the 20th, 1984. I haven't forgotten to continue for you part two of the Henry Kissinger link to Nazis. It is just pushed aside temporarily because of the other news stories. And I'm going to continue the recent appointments of Ronald Reagan, part three. I haven't forgotten those either. But the news this week ties together as a whole, so I don't want to divert from what I see in the papers and what is happening now. But we will get back to those because they're all part of the same problem. But because the GOP convention is taking place in Dallas, Texas, and I had written an article and have done 20 years research on the links of the Nazis, Nazi Germany, the OSS, and the CIA to the murder of John Kennedy, I want to explain just briefly the news stories by title, and then get to them one by one. Not this week, there are too many, but to go over them again in analytic detail. But I want you to get the overview of what I'm trying to say here, because that's more important than taking three items and then breaking it up. I did that with some of the appointments of Ronald Reagan and listed the names so you know what you're going to hear in the future, details about these and other people. But I do want this full circle to have the continuity because of some very important stories, and I'll get to as many as I can in the hour. Number one, the newspaper today, the Monterey Herald, has a story, Famous Dallas Sites Draw Convention, the Delegates to the Republican Convention. And listed among those sites is the Grassy Knoll, which is walking distance from where the convention is in Dallas, Texas. And in this article, it says the Texas School Book Depository, where Oswald allegedly fired the shots against President John F. Kennedy. And evidently they have a plaque there on the wall or part of the building acknowledging the fact that he allegedly did it, not that he fired any shot or the fatal shot that killed John Kennedy in 1963. Now the testimony of various witnesses at the second hearing, actually the third, there was a Rockefeller Commission on the CIA and then the House Select Committee on Assassinations, came to the conclusion there was a conspiracy. But researchers such as Penn Jones Jr., who lives in Texas, Charles Spears, and various people, over 200, who have written books on the Kennedy assassination out of maybe 210 million in the country, have kept that truth alive, and at least, as I understand the newspaper article, they only have an allegedly fired shots, which is quite an admission. That is engraved, evidently, in Dallas now. Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon are actually men who stole the presidency because of the murder. They all worked together to cover it up, to secret witnesses. Gerald Ford was put on the Warren Commission by Richard Nixon. Nixon got himself back into the White House, and Ronald Reagan was a selected person to follow Richard Nixon, according to my years of research, and it's all documented in the back tapes. Now, I'll briefly go into the DeLorean trial, not a lot of it, but again, it links to the Kennedy assassination. Remember, it was an article I had on broadcast number 583, Will DeLorean Deliver Hollywood? No, he didn't deliver anybody. DeLorean got off, and I usually begin the program with this time last year. This time last year, tape number 611, August the 22nd, 1984, I talked about John DeLorean's missing millions, the links to Mark Rich, Henry Kissinger, Licio Gelli, the fascist, Nazi, and the Nugent Hand Bank in Australia, the tanglement of money and personalities weaving together, converging in Hollywood, the State Department, and so forth. DeLorean, of course, had to get off. When he got off the trial, newspaper articles covering it had various items, but one of particular interest in the San Francisco Chronicle, August the 18th. Judge kept his cool during heated trial. This is Judge Robert M. Takasugi, T-A-K-A-S-U-G-I. He was appointed to the municipal court in 1973 by Ronald Reagan. Now, remember when Larry Flint was showing these tapes of the DeLorean trial on national television, they were given to him by Gordon Novell, who has been accused of being an assassin in the John Kennedy murder, going back to Dallas and those days. and Larry Flynt was treated very cruelly by this judge and fined $20,000 a day to bring in that money, and then he was sent to a federal prison and a federal mental hospital where they could control his mind or influence his thinking and alter him in many ways that he doesn't know or we don't know for, you know, future years to come. Now, President Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission nominated to the federal court this judge in 1976. So 1 month after Larry Flynt got out his L.A. Free Press with the story of Gerald Ford and the Earl Warren, the Warren Commission, and the lying about the Kennedy assassination, he was shot in Georgia. 1 month after he decided to write the article on the JFK and the Nazis, publish it, and do more on the real story of the Kennedy assassination to the Nazi-German connections. As soon as he decided to do that, within a month, people like Gordon Novell had moved into his house, G. Gordon Liddy, Mitchell Werbel. So Gordon Novell was part of the Kennedy assassination. He's been accused of it. He moved into the Larry Flynt home. Novell worked for people that Gerald Ford covered up. Ronald Reagan and Gerald Ford put this judge from municipal court to the federal court. Gordon Novell went on the payroll of Larry Flynt. He was in his home, as I said, with Mitchell Werbel. Gordon Novell was a friend of John DeLorean, planted tapes with Larry Flynt to blow the case. Gordon Novell was a suspect in the Kennedy assassination. Gordon Novell destroyed evidence in Watergate that made Gerald Ford president. And Gordon Novell is linked to letters to the jury coming from Congressman Edwards saying that the FBI stings are no good. Now, the jury names and addresses were given to some person, certainly not the prosecution or the Justice Department, unless they worked together with the defense to get him off. And the trial went on, and on the basis of those opinions, they didn't say thanks to the letters, but they mouthed the very words that were in the letter, and the judge should have had a mistrial, but instead he let DeLorean off. Another story on the DeLorean case, the lawyers of the winning team, this was also in the Chronicle, August the 17th, the Howard and Don show, and it tells how every day after court there was a press conference and they stood at a certain spot and gave reviews. Donald Ray from Princeton, New Jersey, went to Princeton, he's from New Jersey, was one of the attorneys for DeLorean. He also represented Andrew D. Lee, a co-partner of Christopher Boyce. They were involved in alleged spying, working for the CIA, and also in cocaine traffic involving the Nugent Hand Bank in Australia. And a year ago this week, I was talking of the links of DeLorean to the Nugent Hand cocaine traffic, that ball of wax down there in Australia. He also is the attorney for the Church of Scientology, which I think is interesting, and Eddie Nash, who was wanted arson for profit with that mob group. Howard Weitzman, the other attorney for DeLorean, was the attorney for Mary Bruner, a member of the Manson family that got off. And I have made links to Manson family, to the Pancos case. It's been in the news, but it was set up by the Los Angeles Police Department and Sheriff Peter Pitches and the Operation Chaos and COINTEL program. It was actually the beginning of these mass murders that look like revolutionaries, counterintelligence in the United States, and then they reduced it to Charles Manson and dropped the links to Dallas, Texas, or Fort Worth, and Charles Watson, and the connections of drug, CIA, and counterintelligence. So these attorneys could get their man off just on what they know and their interconnecting links, which isn't any different than the particular clients that they've had that I've talked about before on these cases. Now, there was a war council, changing the subject now to a war council, which I believe is setting the stage for World War III. It has to do with a meeting at the Monterey Peninsula of absolutely the A-team. I'll read you their names and share some of this information with you. And then on other broadcasts, as I say, I'll give you detail reports that were in the Monterey Herald of the particular meeting. But first of all, the newspapers this week, all the wire services, had the story, or most of them, Russian accounts of spying of the United States. And they pointed to the U.S. Embassy, one story in the San Francisco Chronicle, the U.S. Embassy, the Los Angeles Times had stories. Most of the papers that I take carried it on the wire service that the embassy is a den of spies. And the Soviet Union was charging that the Department of Defense Language Institute in Monterey, California, is the source of a lot of spying that we send diplomats, graduate students, tourists, business executives, scholars, and seamen. That's also directly linked to the Institute of Foreign Studies here on the Monterey Peninsula with John McCone, former director of the CIA when John Kennedy was killed, and a Knight of Malta with the Vatican and part of the ITT hierarchy when Salvador Allende murder was ordered. John McCone is on the board of the Monterey Institute of Foreign Studies, and they share professors and work with the Department of Defense Language Institute in Monterey. And that's very important because this is a nest where we send people. I can name particular people that allegedly are hierarchies in the Civil Liberties Union that are CIA that have taken frequent trips to Moscow. A cover for their so-called trips of sharing and having peace is to attach themselves to well-meaning people as tourists and join the entourage. The other story that you never would get in your papers, only local here, Navy postgraduate school hosts a meeting on Grenada lessons. That was 4 days here from August the 15th to the 20th. Attending this meeting, there were 60 people. These are the ones that were in our newspaper, and we'll have more articles about that, and I'll say break them down for you on other broadcasts. Vernon Walters, ambassador to the law at large. He's, of course, a Knight of Malta from the Vatican. He's behind every major coup that ever took place for the United States government since the days of the OSS. He was down in Brazil, responsible for that military dictatorship, the one that followed immediately the John Kennedy assassination. From November 63, it's 1964, is when Brazil was overthrown with a military dictatorship. Winston Lord was here, president of the Council on Foreign Relations. Now, Vernon Walters is such a biggie. I mentioned him first. Winston Lord represented the Council on Foreign Relations. That's Mr. Rockefeller and Henry Kissinger. Tom Farrer, F-A-R-E-R, from Rutgers University School of Law, also from the Council on Foreign Relations and Carnegie Endowment for Peace. Quote, Richard Pipes, you know him? Harvard University, former National Security Council and State Department. He's the man who said the Soviet Union must change its form of government or be wiped out. If you think that the Ronald Reagan statement was just a joke in the mic, it was a message, because the same week that all of this was taking place around Europe and in the United States, articles on what President Reagan said. He didn't make a mistake. He meant to say it. Mr. Pipe said it when he was working for Reagan, and he's one of the most violent anti-communists. So when he says Russia can't exist, and the president says it can't exist, that team member was out here in Monterey. Konstantin Menges was here, M-E-N-G-E-S, senior director of Latin American Affairs from the National Security Council, special assistant to Ronald Reagan. Retired Army Lieutenant General Edward Rowney, chairman of the Strategic Arms Reduction Talks Committee of the U.S. Arms Control and Disarmament Agency that will not deal with the USSR that broke up the arms talks. John Matlock Jr., special assistant to the president, senior, these are senior directors, not schleppers coming here, for the European and Soviet affairs. Mr. Pipes and George Bush were also on a team, the A and B team, studying the Soviet affairs. Matlock is the senior director of Europe and the Soviet affairs on the National Security Council, because that ties in to the Grenada Blitzkrieg, identical to Hitler's invasion of Poland. I'll detail these roles later and what it means. Maurice Bishop had gone to the National Security Council when William Clark was the director of it and asked for assistance in Grenada. He didn't have to appeal to the Marxists at that time. He was turned down. Information about his visit was leaked to Mr. Cord down there and the people that killed Bishop by the information that he had been in Washington, where he was appealing for help to us, and then he was shot and murdered down there. And Nestor Sanchez, S-A-N-C-H-E-Z, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Defense for Inter-American Affairs, and 60 people participate. I've only given you seven or eight names. There were 60 participants from government agencies not named. I imagine the Defense, Intelligence, the Air Force, the Navy. It was done at Navy post-grad. You know, when the men go to Annapolis, and women, they go for Navy four-year training. Navy post-grad is the elite that go into the computer, the atomic sciences, the engineering, artwork, all kinds of things for people who have graduated beyond that. It is the elite of the Navy. The government agencies were all there. Universities were represented. I'm sure Stanford was there, and Harvard, and Yale, and Princeton. Private foundations, which I'm sure are the CIA fronts for the coups that come in and bring money and have their cover for spies to overthrow countries. And the National News Organization. And they'll be the future news people that will be at the next Blitzkrieg, which it was a Hitler Blitzkrieg in Grenada. And they will cover the news because the military said no news for 5 days. But this way, they'll decide which news people who attended the military conference put on. It was sponsored by the Department of Defense, the Kenan Institute of Woodrow Wilson Center. Now, at the same time that this high-level meeting was going on, former National Security Advisor William Clark, that's Ronald Reagan's right-hand man and bag man, the guy that brought Helene von Damm from Europe and delivered her to Otto Bolschwing when they both arrived here from Germany and Vienna. Clark was on the Monterey Peninsula this week, photographed visually at Point Sur, handing over a Navy installation station to the state of California. But the timing was such that all of his employees, funkies, buddies, were here at the same time. And I can't believe he has to pass right by Monterey, the Navy Postgraduate School in Monterey, even to get to the airport. It's about 2 miles or a mile from the airport, and you go right by. So I can't believe that he didn't time the turning over of Point Sur, and the paper said he was here just before he leaves for Dallas, Texas. And also, the newspaper this morning had a story that John Layman, who is Secretary of the Navy, a hierarchy in the Vatican enclave, working closely with the Vatican and for the ammunition he needs to make war against Russia, World War III. He was in China for 4 days at the identical time that these people were meeting in Monterey, the cream of the anti-Soviet group. And one of the things they had with them at this particular meeting were documents taken from the invasion of Grenada. And one story in the Monterey Herald, which again I'll share with you later, says that it was a very valuable meeting because they had all these treasure troves that referred to, of captured documents ranging from a shopping list of military equipment to the minutes of high government meetings. Now, there were no witnesses when those documents were taken out of Maurice Bishop's desk. The people who got them, and I have pictures of them, where Mr. Brown, who publishes Soldiers of Fortune and had his special forces and his private mercenaries all over the place, rummaging through the papers of dead Bishop while the world press was kept off the island for 5 days. Along with him is Michael Ledeen, who's worked hard on the counterintelligence lies that the Bulgarian KGB shot John Paul the first, the second rather. We know, I confused the murder of John Paul I, so many investigations, with the attempted murder of John Paul II. Ledeen and Claire Sterling have pushed that story for the Defense Department. Michael Ledeen works with Licio Gelli, who I have talked about constantly and even up to last week. They got their hands on the papers. I have their pictures, Brown and Ledeen. And then we have a high-level meeting where they sit over these juicy things and discuss what they should do. And this is a great turning point in foreign policy that America uses great aggression. And these papers are identical to the diary of Lee Harvey Oswald that was planted, or those KGB letters to the athletes, alleged KGB letters that were written to the athletic teams at the Olympic Games saying that the Klan was going to get them. And then William French Smith says that they came from the KGB. And I'll do more on that in a few minutes. But this four-day conference ended, and then some of them remained on the peninsula. Now, if there are threats to me and my family that caused me to go off the air for a while, I have a pretty good idea that by the time I got off the air last Monday and was making these tapes for you as private individuals, can you visualize if I was putting this tape on Kazoo tonight over in Pacific Grove, and these people are in town? It said some of them are staying over visiting town after their meeting. These heavies with John Meese's son over at Fort Ord and all of these people surrounding this area, and here I've been hitting the grenade invasion as being as rotten and unexposed as anything like comparing to the John Kennedy assassination or the Korean Airlines story. This was a very important event, and now the team is studying it to get ready, I know, for World War III. They love that invasion. And the Monterey Peninsula hosted this conference. And as I say, I have to do a lot more with you on this conference and the particular statements. It was well covered in our paper, but I want to go on to other matters, as I stated. Now, in terms of taking this country, overthrowing it, causing chaos, such as the Bologna bombing in Italy, we have to have a lot of violence and a lot of teamwork to make people unnerved or unsettled. And one of the examples would have been at the Olympic Games if the Soviet Union had been there. And if Edwin Meese III were the Attorney General, there surely would have been a lot of this kind of violence. So when the Olympics came and went and they couldn't pull it, there was one last brahu to have what I call the Olympic potential Reichstag. And the papers last week, August the 14th, had stories. You saw them. An officer finds bomb on Olympic bus. Heroic LAPD man removes the bomb from the Turkish bus, and it tells about his heroism and that Mr. Daryl Gates from the Los Angeles Police Department, and I've talked about Western Golds and Gates for the past 2 years, Gates said that they were going to give this man the Medal of Valor for helping find that bomb. They evacuated 2,500 people from the airport, and as I say, we'll do even more details on this particular bomb story. But then the next day or 2 days later, there's a story, officer charged with planting the bomb on the bus. And it turns out that this is a member from the elite squad, that Metro Division that worked with the Police Intelligence Division that became the anti-terrorist unit. And Jimmy Wade Pearson, P-E-A-R-S-O-N, is the man who put the bomb on the bus. Now, he's important, again, going back to Dallas, back to the Warren Commission. He was given a Hero's Medal of Honors for something he did. They don't know what. The records are locked up. They say those are always kept secret. And by Gerald Ford of the Warren Commission, he was made a hero. This particular officer, just briefly, worked for Western Electric. Then he went into Navy intelligence. He had two stints in Vietnam. He took trips to Turkey with Jack Cousteau. He was an elite guarding the most important potentates for the Olympic Games and the special bomb squad team. And then it turns out that he's the one who planted the bomb as a last brahu, I guess to show that their hundreds of millions of dollars for security weren't wasted, and he was a hero working his way up maybe into the intelligence group. But somebody figured out that the bus couldn't have gotten through, no one could have gotten through the security to the bomb except somebody on the police force or in charge of security. And sure enough, he had this, he says, a little homemade bomb, but I'll do more on that in the Los Angeles Police Department's bombs and where they come from. So that story is thrown out. But had there not been a discovery that he did it, they would have blamed the Armenians, and that gets into the political group, Robert Keith Gray, the extension of the CIA and his public relations office with Paul Axalt and William Casey, represents Turkey, and they want to lambast the Armenian group and keep making them responsible for terrorist acts against nice Turkey that is a member of the NATO group. Now, in Los Angeles Times, August 15th, 1984, a story, many vie for credit as terrorists. Now, RAND Corporation did many studies telling how the terrorists would be at the Olympic Games and who the American terrorists are, the people on American soil. And simultaneously, with the time that this particular man was identified and had to confess, he was throwing the bomb, a man claiming to represent the Armenian terrorist organization called the American Wire Service in Bureau in Paris, and claimed that he was responsible for the bomb, planting it on a Turkish Olympic team bus. Now, what are the mathematical chances that a confession was going on in Paris that I did it as an Armenian? And again, it goes back to the planted letters, the disinformation, the lies, the planted diaries, the planted confessions. Somebody in Paris is saying, I did it, I'm an Armenian, and I bombed that, and it turns out that it is nothing but the Los Angeles Police Department with their own bombs. As I say, we'll go back to that in detail. I can't pass this story up now, but I just want to put it in a context of a lot of other news. And then at the same time that that was happening, there was a story by Elliot Abrams from our human, he was hired by Reagan for the human rights and humanitarian affairs. Let's be fair to Turkey. They're loyal to NATO. They border Bulgaria, Russia, Iran, Iraq, Syria. They've had a rough going. And one of the ways to be fair to Turkey is to make it look like the Armenians are against them, that Turkey is a victim of this kind of violence and terrorism by the Armenians. And also the national, Lyndon LaRouche paper, not Solidarity, it's his other executive intelligence review. I want to separate the two. One is a newspaper and the other is a magazine. New Solidarity is the newspaper. Executive Intelligence Review is the magazine. He published and sold at a very expensive price a special booklet on terrorist threat to North America. LaRouche is supposed to be the expert, and he told about the aggression of the Armenians and how they would be a danger at the World's Fair, the Olympic Games, the Republican Convention, Democratic Convention, and he has a long story on the terrible Armenians. And if the bomb had gone off, and if they didn't find out that it was the LABD who said it, then Lyndon LaRouche would come out looking like a real hero, because he told us that at the Olympic Games there would be this terrorism of the Armenians, and sure it is. It's right there, and luckily some honest cop picked it up and forced the confession of the guy who did it, or we would still believe that the Turkish people were victims and that we were right to have so much security and that the Soviet Union imports terrorism. And nations that are not working with us are possible terrorists to continue these acts when, again, they're done by the fascists and the Nazis all over the world. This is the way, as I say, you start World War III or you build up to World War III with this kind of terrorist activity that is so obvious. If you study the SLA as the CIA, which I did, set up by the Operation Chaos and Counterintelligence, these American terrorist groups are set up by the government. They're similar to Tsarist Russia, the pogroms. They're similar to Nazi Germany, blaming certain people for activities when they actually are done by yourself for the purpose of harming them, their credibility. And also, one of the reasons to scream terrorism is that you buy the guns, the mace, the SWAT teams, the helicopters, so that when there are genuine, hungry people, unemployed people, you don't distinguish them from poor and non-productive. You call them guerrillas or terrorists, and then you have the means to knock them down. And if we're going to an era where our steel is being controlled from overseas, our cars are being made along with Japan, our clothing factories are overseas, Ford Motor Company is building their factories over in Taiwan. I read this week, not all of them, but some of them, when the nurses are all brought in from the Philippines, when you buy everything that is not made in America or by Americans and the labor is used overseas because it's cheaper, eventually you will need those teams to come back and control the mobs. So they create the excuse for the police before they get the mobs out on the streets, knowing eventually if you don't have health care and housing and education and entertainment or recreation, and there's nothing but street people and narcotics and muggings and murders, the police will come in to save you, and all the weapons were made and sold. So it's very important to blame these terrorists, as I say, like Hitler did, to get a police force, an elite force, like that Blue Thunder, the Blue Teams, the Special Forces, the Rangers, to come in, the Soldiers of Fortune, to come in. And this story of the Los Angeles Police Department is the epitome of the cruds of the people we were talking about that work with J. Paul from Western Goals with the Pentagon and the officials in Washington, D.C. If you haven't read all of those stories on the police department and the confession of the top elite policemen who got all these medals for heroism, but they won't say when or how, if you don't have that, and I'll do more detail on it because it's important to the whole stage from Nazi Germany to Dallas, to the present time. We'll take a one-minute break to turn over this tape, or a 1 second. We're not on the air now, so we can do it in 1 second, and I'll be back inside, too.